Welcome to the Organic Gardener Podcast. I'm your host, Jackie Beyer. Let's get growing. Welcome to the show today. I'm very excited to introduce my guest, Marcy Hines, who lives right here in Eureka with me in Montana. And she's going to tell us about her gardening experience. So welcome to the show, Marcy.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure. I'm really excited.
Cool. Well, we're excited to have you. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Oh, boy. Well, let's see. I'm a Montana native, but I grew up over on the West Coast in Washington. So I've got some experience in different types of gardening, and coming here was definitely an eye-opener, because it's totally different climate. So
did you move here recently? Like, you've been in Washington
about,
for a while?
I've been here probably about 15 years.
Okay.
It's a challenge, but it's a lot of fun.
Cool. So, all right. Well, we'll learn some more as we go, I guess. So I always like to kind of start out the show by talking about your very first gardening experience. Like, how old were you? Were you a kid, an adult? Who were you with? What'd you grow? Like, how did you very first get introduced to gardening?
It probably started with the dirt. Because I remember being, just a little kid and in the backyard and making mud pies and playing in the sand pile. My whole family is in construction, so the big treat was to go to work and ride in the loaders or ride on the backhoes. It was all about the dirt. I just loved it. There's something about it. And, it's probably like a hereditary thing. My grandfather's name is Gardner, and my dad's middle name is Gardner, and our last name Hines means ivy. It's Irish. So, I think I just probably didn't have a choice. It's going to be about the earth and about growing. My mom didn't have any plants. She had a couple of really sad irises, and we had really tall grass, and it was just a disaster. But the neighbor lady had snapdragons. She had a box full of snapdragons out front. And that was probably my first, it was such a draw to see something so beautiful when we had just our few scraggly irises, As for actually gardening, it was after I grew up. I had to kind of learn on my own because we didn't really have that much as far as gardening. My mom, she wasn't really outside active in the garden. Mm-hmm. And my dad was pretty busy, so it was pretty much on my own. And I think the first real garden experience was going to my grandfather's and picking giant cabbage leaves and lacing them together into skirts.
Oh, how fun!
Yeah, and that's the first garden experience I remember.
Now, was he here in Montana or was that in Washington?
He's both. He was in Washington, and then in his last years, he came to live with me, and he would sit outside and overview my garden and give me tips.
So,
yeah.
So then go ahead and tell us, what does organic gardening or earth-friendly gardening mean to you?
All natural. No man-made chemicals. I use fish meal and green sand, some of those things, but as much just straight compost as I can is my preference.
What's green sand?
Green sand. These are minerals from the earth. A lot of this stuff where you can use green sand and you can use bone meal and you can use blood meal. There's all the different combinations. My preference is compost. And so organic, it's just non-man-made.
I never heard of green sand before. I'll have to look up that up.
Yeah.
So who or what inspired you to start using organic techniques?
I think I probably got a hold of some books, Findhorn books, like The Magic of Findhorn, and I don't know if that's real common anymore, but, it was this garden over in Scotland and just kind of growing in the rocks and just, working with nature, working with the elementals and the magic from it. Just the amazing gardens when you're when you're in cooperation and co-partnership with nature instead of just your own agenda.
I like that.
Yeah, I think that's probably what first got me going on the organic end of it.
So then is that how you learned how to garden organically, reading those books? Or how do you spell, let me just get you to go ahead and spell it.
Findhorn?
Yeah.
FINDHORN.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's way off.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was probably the beginning of it. And since then, you know, I've read a lot of other, like there's the Paralandra books. Even some of these new books like Anastasia, she talks about working with the elements, working with nature. You know, and some of the old gardeners here, I have a friend that works with the moon phases and, you know, and you can see the difference when you're working in cooperation with nature instead of telling it, you know, just your way or the highway, you know, mm-hmm. you work together.
Can you tell us a little bit about the moon element, like how that works? Is that kind of like the old farmer's almanac, like
yeah.
the new moon and things?
Yeah, yeah. There's something to be said for a lot of that. I mean, everything is, you know, we're all part of the cosmos and all, so much of everything is composed of water, which is affected by the tides. So it just makes sense, you know, that we're going to feel the differences and the plants feel it too. So, you know, a lot of times you'll plant things like, say, your root crops might be in one phase of the moon, and then your leaf crops might be in another phase, that type of thing.
Oh, uh-huh. Mike and I were kind of talking about that and looking at the calendar and things. And then he was saying that there's kind of an old farmer's tale around here that once the snow's melted off of Terrielt Pass is the time to plant. So we were kind of wondering if the snow was off the pass.
Yeah, yeah, there's that.
Can't really
you know,
see it today.
No, you can't really see it. Or, you know, they'll say when the lilacs bloom, you do this. And, you know, there's all these old things that really do pay off if you mm-hmm. follow them.
That's a good one, too.
Yeah.
The lilacs are smelling so nice, aren't they? They're really starting to bloom.
Yeah.
All right. Well, tell us about something that grew well this year. What did you plant? Like, probably last summer is when we're talking about still.
Yeah, pretty much. Let's see. Well, we've got probably our big deal here is garlic. Because my partner's really big on garlic, and he's had the blue ribbon 3 years in a row at the county fair. And then last year it was actually best vegetable too. So that was, you know, most noteworthy probably was the garlic. Yeah. And it's an old heirloom variety that's from the valley here. And yeah, I would say that was probably most noteworthy.
Okay. How about something you're excited to do different next year, or something you're excited to try that's new? Going to do something different this year?
Well, let's see. I've got some little honey berries that I've started. I love starting stuff from seed, and it'll be interesting to see how they take off.
What are honey berries?
They are, they do really well in a cold area, you know, like we're zone 3 to 5, depending on where you are here. And they do really well in these colder zones. They're the first berry of the season. They come on even before strawberries do. And they look kind of like an oblong little blueberry type of look.
Oh.
So I'm kind of excited to see how those do. Just cool. Because it's always fun, you know, when you've started something from seed to see it go the whole way.
Mm-hmm. So, like, then are they on a bush or a
plant? Yeah, they're a little bush, like a little huckleberry bush type of thing.
Oh, they are. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I was kind of picturing, like a blueberry bush, but then I thought maybe they're like a strawberry plant. Okay, so like a bush.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
And you started them from seed.
Started those from seed and started goji berries from seed, too, and that was a lot of fun.
Oh, okay. So, I've been hearing a lot about those lately.
Yeah, yeah, they're all the rage, so yeah.
Now, did you start those indoors, like in a greenhouse type of thing, or in your windowsill, or outside, or?
I started those inside. We've moved over the last few years, and I'm not really set up to do a whole lot outside. Mm-hmm. It would be ideal if those were in the greenhouse, but yeah, for right now, starting stuff inside and, you know, just really baby them. With the gojis, I really had to baby those probably the first year or so. The honey berries were a little hardier.
Okay. So,
yeah, they seemed to do a little bit better, yeah.
All right. How about something that didn't work so well last season? Didn't go quite the way you expected.
I try not to remember those things. You know, I don't know that anything didn't do well. Maybe the carrots, because I didn't thin them as well as I could have. I'm not real big on thinning.
I know, it just, it's so hard, right?
Yeah, it's really hard. I try and just, if I do have to thin, let it get big enough to where I can use it anyway. But probably the carrots, I didn't thin them well enough, and so it wasn't really their fault.
Uh-huh. I know, and the hardest thing about carrots to me is those seeds are just so tiny.
Yeah.
So then to try to get them to spread out so they're not so thick and all together, it's hard.
I was so good this year. I was so patient. I planted each one so carefully because I didn't want to have to thin. And then a couple weeks later, I watched the robins out there, and they were scratching and throwing the seeds every direction. And I just had to laugh because it was just... You know, mm-hmm. It's going to happen. So,
we have chickens this year that can get out of their pen that we've uh-huh. never had before. We've never had chickens that can fly. And this year, the chickens all seem to be able to get out of the pen. And so they're getting into the garden. And I just don't know what we're going to do. Like, Mike built this new little fence. I call it the mini farm. And they have uh-huh. not gotten into that part. But our regular garden that he is about to plant, probably soon as the rain's gone, with like all the starts, like the tomatoes and the eggplants and everything that's going to go in the deep beds. I just don't know what we're going to do because these chickens are used to getting out there now.
Oh yeah, you're going to have fun.
Yeah, we've never. I don't know.
Can you clip their wings?
I don't know.
You clip one wing?
I suppose.
Yeah. Oh wow.
I've kind of always stayed away from the chickens because I don't like them being in the pen. And then this year he finally he built them like a door so they could get out into the woods part. But we got these new chickens a few months ago, and somehow two or three of them at least can fly. And they keep hopping over the chicken pen into the regular garden. They don't even go out with the other chickens out the other door.
Oh, you're going to have
kind
fun.
Of interesting. Yep. So we're going to, something new is going to have to happen. Either he's going to have to chicken proof this garden a little more, or build a roof over some kind of, I don't know. I don't know what he's going to do. I don't know what's going to happen. Or clip their wings, I guess. I don't know what that entails. Doesn't sound like me. Anyway, how about something you find that is easy to grow and generally successful every time?
Oh boy. You know, we're pretty lucky here. Most anything will grow, you know, except for some of the hot weather stuff. Potatoes probably about the easiest thing I can think of.
Okay. And just regular, like, baking potatoes or just any kind of potatoes?
Well, you know, there's certain varieties that do better here. Like, we're not really known for doing russets here in our area. If you like fingerlings, a lot of those do really well. The Yukon Golds do really well. Just some of the old heirloom varieties do really well too. Okay. I get a lot of starts or my seed like from Irish Eyes and you know, some of those places where you can get like the old purple varieties and that. That's kind of fun.
Oh, I've never tried those. Purple potatoes, huh?
Yeah, they're awesome. They're just a lot of fun.
All right. Yeah. We've grown the red ones.
Uh-huh.
And then just regular, I think we got Yukon Golds.
Uh-huh.
Or the other ones. How about something you would steer new gardeners away from that you find is typically challenging to grow in your climate?
Well, I hate to tell anybody, you know, not to do it. Something just because if you're really into it, chances are you could succeed, but probably corn because it's mm-hmm. you know, because of the time, mm-hmm. you know, unless you've got like a really early variety, and because of the you know, it's got to have everything just right to get a really good crop. Mm-hmm. Takes a lot of space, a lot of nutrients. But I, you know, I've had good years of it by starting it early, by starting it in the house. I've had some good years with it. So that would probably be the one thing that I'd say.
Mike's motto is it has to be knee high by the 4th of July.
Yeah, that's what they say.
For the corn to grow.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, corn's probably the one that's almost everybody from Montana ends up answering for this question. And it's been tough for us. And then last year we had the best crop and then we got that cold frost on September. I think it was like September 7th. It got down to 22 and that was the end of the corn.
I know.
And we had so many ears coming. Usually we can cover it up enough, like throw some plastic over it, but that was just too much.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's a challenge for sure. We got some new corn seed this year that I had this guest, Robin. I can't remember her last name is, but she's in Whitefish and she has the Good Seed Company. So if you need some seeds, you should check her out because she's got very locally climatized seeds. And then she was talking about this guy from, where is he from? Idaho, I think. I don't know. He originally was in Montana. He went to U of M and then he went over to Russia and got seeds from Russia. And brought them back. And so they're like from Siberia and they're really like seasoned to cold weather. So I went and ordered some of those corn seeds. So we're going to see how that goes this year.
Oh, good. Yeah, that might do it then. I've got one from Alaska that I used 2 years ago. And that one made it. It was only like a 54 day or something like that.
That's really short.
Yeah, that's really short.
And it made full ears of corn in 54 days?
It did. It did. Yeah. But like I said, you know, it's one of those things that that'd be the last thing I'd recommend anybody do.
Yep. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
How about, what's your least favorite activity to do in the garden? Is there anything you got to force yourself to get out there and do?
The thinning. I just really don't. It's just so hard to pull the babies. It's just really hard. I have to tell them all, I'm sorry. Yeah.
How about your favorite activity to do in the garden then?
Outside of just watching it, you know, watching the wildlife, the butterflies and the birds and that, and just sitting there and being in it. I really like collecting seeds. It's kind of like one of those uncontrollable things that I do wherever I go. And so I let everything go to seed and I like collecting the seeds at the end of the season. I like letting stuff go to seed and then collecting them.
So tell us a little more about that. Like, you know, maybe some tips on how to collect seeds or you were telling me the day we ran into each other at the river the other day about collecting cherry seeds.
Oh, yeah. Cherry pits. Yeah. Well, you know, it just depends on what you're getting the seeds from. But, you know, you want them to be mature and dry when you collect them, and then make sure that they're real dry before you package them, however you're going to store them. And, you know, it's pretty simple. And then just start out with them the next year or, you know, a lot of the seeds will last more than 1 year. But I usually collect some of everything, especially off of the best crop or the best plant. Like, say I'll pick, say I want to go for early, like on kale. So I'll watch the first plant that comes up. I'll let it go to maturity and I'll save its seeds.
Oh, that's a good idea. Because then, you know, is that like going to be a shorter?
Well, then, you know, then
type of one then?
Then I'll, you know, it'll just give me a little, maybe a little jump start possibly. It might have had a better spot too, but, you know, I just keep working it that way with collecting the best of the best. Or say you had, like I've got a pumpkin that was like, oh my God, this is the best pumpkin I've ever had. It tasted so good. So I'll save that guy's seeds, you know, or, but just depending on what you're looking for, or maybe there's a plant that was the hardiest and no bugs bothered it. You might want to save the seeds off of that one.
Okay. So, see, great tips there.
Yeah.
Now, what'd you do with the cherry pits? Did you go plant them somewhere? Are you going to grow cherry trees?
I did 100 little pots of these little Lambert cherries.
No
and,
way.
It was kind of a rough transplant, so I did lose some on that. But the ones that are doing it are looking really good. So, yeah, they're looking for a new home here, and I just need more space. I need more space. Because I've got a big pile of choke cherries that I've got to transplant, and then I've got a pile of these Italian prunes you know, that grow around here. And they're probably at their second year now, so they definitely have to be transplanted.
Cool. So,
yeah.
All right. So you're going to start like a little nursery or something?
Oh, it's bound to happen. It's just, it, you know, I don't see any way around it.
Okay. Tell us about the best crop you ever grew. Was there one year that something was just so prolific you were surprised and didn't know what to do with all the produce?
Oh, geez. A couple years ago, we did like 38 tomato plants and they went nuts. They were in a greenhouse. We had a big hoop greenhouse set up and we just had the whole garage floor covered with tomatoes. It was unbelievable. And we canned like 178 quarts of salsa and I don't know how many of sauce and how many of tomato. It was crazy. And dried them. It was crazy. It was just crazy.
Now, how do you dry tomatoes? Do you just lay them out in the sun, like sun-dried tomatoes, or do you put them in a dehydrator?
Slice them. Yeah, slice them. You know, you slice them the thickness that you want and then dehydrate them. Yeah, we've got lots of dehydrators. You know, you could sun dry them too if you've got a way to keep the bugs off.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, and that's probably my preferred method for preserving is drying stuff. I think it probably retain a little more nutrients that way, although we do a lot of canning. I kind of shy away from freezing because I've had a few winter outages when I wasn't home on the freezer that didn't turn out real well. So.
Oh.
But that used to be what I did with all the berries was freeze them. So, but yeah, drying is probably my preferred way of keeping stuff.
And then do you just keep it in like a plastic container or glass or in a candy?
As much glass as possible. But yeah, some of it, there's just too much and it's in, you know, like 5 gallon buckets or we've done some in the Sealamil thing, but it seems to be if you keep it in an airtight bucket and then, you know, keep it in cold storage or something like that, it keeps pretty well.
Okay.
Yeah.
What kind of things do you dry besides tomatoes?
Oh, geez. Well, I do a lot of herbs, onions, garlic. I've done, you know, just about everything. I've tried just about everything to see how it would work. I've done a lot of apples, the plums, raspberries, strawberries, everything. You can dry anything.
Oh,
just
really?
About.
Raspberries, yeah. Too, huh?
Kale. A lot of people like the dried kale, mm-hmm. You know, and then you put oil on it and some seasoning and make chips out of them and all that kind of stuff. I make a lot of seasoning. My one friend that I met here when I first moved here is an excellent gardener. She has the most beautiful flower gardens. And she has a recipe for herbs, and it's like over a dozen herbs with a lot of garlic and onion and salt and, you know, combining all those ground up. It's kind of like a multi-purpose seasoning. You can use it on anything. Cool. So, yeah, I do a lot of that.
Okay. How about, what's the best gardening advice you've ever received?
Oh, I guess the one tip that I hadn't heard was just picking the tops off the onions, you know, when they go to seed, to let them get some bigger size.
Oh.
I remember getting that as a tip.
So wait, what do you do now?
You know what? Sometimes if you don't have your timing just right on when you planted the onions or with the watering, it hasn't been quite right and they'll go to seed too soon.
Oh, uh-huh.
On the top and they haven't fully formed, then that can take away from the bulb from the main onion.
Uh-huh.
So if you take the tops off, pinch them off, then the rest, you know, the nutrients can keep going into the onion and the growth will come in the main bulb instead of going out into the seeds.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So then you kind of talked a little bit about the fair and the garlic. Like I kind of have this question there. Have you ever entered a fair and how'd that go?
Uh-huh.
You want to tell us anything else about entering a fair?
Oh, boy. You know, I've done other things over the years, but that's the one that really comes to mind, I think, was the garlic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's always fun. It's always fun to put stuff in and see what everybody else puts in, and you know.
We haven't done the fair in a while. Mike used to do the fair a lot, and then I don't know, he got tired of it, I think, or just, it's kind of hard with our fair, I think, because it seems to be earlier than most stuff's ready. Some stuff's ready, it just kind of depends on the year, but it seems like, because our fair's at the end of August, and it seems like a lot of things aren't quite ready, but I don't know. He's brought certainly tons of stuff in there. How about a favorite tool that you like to use? If you had to move and could only take one tool with you, what could you not live without?
A shovel. A big shovel. Yeah, I love to dig, so it would have to be a shovel.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like to dig too. That's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I always like to dig a new bed, because then it means you're going to plant something new that year. And I kind of like that whole part of, like, you know, digging up the grass and making a new space. And I don't know, to me, there's something about it. It kind of reminds me of cleaning a backboard, like cutting out this new, getting rid of the sod and cutting a new spot in there and making it new. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about tips for eating or harvesting vegetables or fruit on time? This is a question I ask because everything seems to come up at once for me, and I always get these huge baskets of lettuce, and I don't know. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's enough to take somewhere. Maybe, you know, I'll take a bag to town and drop one off at a friend's house if I'm going to town to visit a friend or something, or for the kids, but it just seems like it's not enough to really take anywhere, but it's way more than I can eat. So got any tips for eating or harvesting vegetables or fruit on time?
Same thing. You got to have people to share with, really helps out. And it's nice if everybody's doing something different or has different things at different times to share. Probably spacing it, you know, to try and space out the lettuce so you're not doing like a huge bed of lettuce. Do a little bit and then plant a little bit more, you know, 2 or 3 weeks later, a little bit more, so you don't get those big amounts like that. But other than that, juicing, I would say, juicing. Because you can use mass amounts by juicing. And it's, you know, it's way better. If you're drinking it fresh, then like, say, if you were to freeze it or can it or anything like that.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Okay. And I kind of like, so everybody's been talking about kale this year, so we're actually growing kale for the first, I've never grown kale, and I kind of tried that green smoothie movement thing, but I don't know, it was really hard for me to put spinach in my juicer, but kale, I could see, at least during the winter, you know, when buying spinach was just really hard to do, and it paid $2 for a bunch of spinach, and then I was gonna, and I'm like eating it on the way home, and I'm like, no, don't eat it, you gotta save it for the butter. And then I was like, practically in tears, I'm like, what am I putting this in my juicer for? But I think I'm like, maybe because I'm just such a vegetable eater, like fruit, on the other hand, I have to force myself to eat fruit. And the smoothie thing's good for me to get my fruit in. And one of my guests actually had a really good suggestion that I go and buy like nectarines when they're on sale and freeze them, just slice them and freeze them. So I have my own frozen nectarines instead of trying to pay, because frozen fruit is so expensive in the middle of winter. And I mean, pretty much any time. So, but that might be a good idea in the middle of summer to kind of do more juicing then, when we have a ton of stuff.
Yeah. And I think your body probably, you know, it's kind of a seasonal thing. If we eat with the seasons, it's usually the best way. So, you know, that's not the kind of stuff you would have in the middle of winter anyway. You'd be doing more root stuff in the middle of the winter. So, but yeah, that seems to work for me anyway.
So then how about secrets for preserving food? I know we kind of talked about dehydrating. Anything else you wanted to say there? Or
We did kind of talk about dehydrating. Yeah, I think that's a good way to go with the canning. The one tip about canning I would say is for pickles around here, I've had to use, which I'm not crazy to do, but I've had to use distilled water to get very good results with pickles, to keep them from clouding up because our water's so hard. But that would be the one thing I'd say about that.
That's interesting. We haven't had that problem. I made tuna last night with homemade canned pickles, and they were so good. And I was like, oh, yum. There's nothing like pickles in the middle of winter.
Yeah, for
just
sure.
Just any time to me. Mike's homemade pickles are so good.
Yeah, I don't know. We just had really hard water, lots of lime. So,
Yes,
yeah.
we do too, but I don't know, those
Yeah.
pickles haven't gotten cloudy
Oh, that's
that I've
good.
seen.
That's
But
good.
yeah, we definitely have hard water, and but we use a Brita filter.
Oh, well, there you
Maybe
go.
that's why.
Yeah, that's it.
How about special techniques for cooking weird or unusual foods? Anything unusual? I mean, I even think those berries you were talking about are kind of something different. Like, what do you
Yeah.
just pop them in your mouth, like fresh berries, like a raspberry or something, or do you cook them, make a
No,
pie?
just eat them fresh. With the gojis, they're real popular dried, but I haven't had enough of those to have to worry about that yet. So, but
Okay.
yeah, I can't really think of any special tips on cooking.
Okay. How about a favorite recipe you like to cook from the garden?
I love pesto.
Oh,
I
okay.
love, lots of, like fresh basil and the fresh garlic. And yeah, that would probably be one of my favorite things.
Okay. I'm going to try to make oregano pesto this year. Some of my guests have been
Oh.
talking about different kinds of pesto, and I
Uh-huh.
have so much oregano. And for
Yeah.
years, I've been like, what can I do with this oregano? If somebody would come up with something I could do with oregano, I mean, I feel like I could feed the whole town of Eureka. I mean, it's just coming out, and I cut it back, and it just grows, and it's coming up everywhere. And I just, even if I try to like throw some plants away, it just overruns my garden. And then somebody was saying you could make oregano, and then I even have Googled it. I have like several recipes that I put up. I mean, people are using walnuts and pecans and almonds and all sorts of different nuts, pine nuts, you know. So
Yeah,
I'm gonna have
yeah.
to try to explore the oregano pesto recipe.
That's a good idea. I'll have to try that.
So, yep. All right. If I ever get a chance to cook something one of these days, and
Yeah,
I'll
there
get to
you
that
go.
part. How about a favorite internet resource? Do you do anything on the computer? Do you look anything up?
I do, but I don't know that I'd say there's just one place. It depends on what I'm looking at. Some stuff off some of the extension offices throughout the country. Like Michigan comes to mind for some reason, but some of the colder states have some good information. And Montana, MSU Extension has some stuff on there.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'll put the links to those in the show notes and look some of those up. And that's a
Yeah.
good idea, just because, we live in Montana doesn't mean you can't look at other extension office websites. I like that.
Yeah.
How about a favorite reading material, like a book or a magazine or any blogs that you really like?
My one gardening friend passes on all of her Country Time, and they have tips in there, in that magazine. I mentioned Findhorn. There's a Ruth Stout has a book on, it's like the no work garden.
Oh.
She's from, she's from ages ago. She's like this 89-year-old woman that her thing is mulching. So instead of working so hard and digging, you put on like a foot of hay on everything and let it turn to mulch, and then you're saving on the digging. But she has some fun books to read.
Okay. Cool. I'll have to look that up. Dude, this has really nothing to do with gardening, but this morning on the news out of Spokane, there was a woman who had run a marathon, a 92-year-old woman who had run her like 12th marathon was crossing the
Wow.
finish line, and they had this big, everybody was clapping for her. I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
All right. Well, my goodness, we're already at the final question. If there was one change you would like to see to create a greener world, what would it be? For example, is there a charity or organization you're passionate about or a project you'd like to see put into action? Like, what do you feel is the most crucial issue facing our planet in regards to the Earth, either locally or on a national or global scale?
Well, I don't know if I would say one specific organization, or I think what people need to do is realize that the earth is alive and the plants respond to our words and our feelings. And if they really connect with what's out there, the world will be a greener place.
Oh, that's sweet. I like that. Perfect. And I think that's really true. I think the closer you are to nature and the more time you spend out there, the more it kind of grows on you, kind of.
Yeah, good one.
I was like, You know, but just the more you do, like if you grow something yourself, you're much more likely to enjoy it. You'll be surprised. Like you might not like tomatoes. And then once you grow a homegrown tomato, you're like, wow, this is a totally different experience. Or I can still remember to this day when I was like in, I don't know, fourth, fifth grade or something. And we went on vacation up to this friend of my mom's, this teacher, Mrs. Monnier's house up in Vermont. And I can still remember getting there that night after the long car ride and her going into the garden and pulling the beets out of the ground and pulling the potatoes out of the ground. And it was like, it was so good. All I wanted to eat were the vegetables. And I can still remember how fresh they tasted. And they didn't need butter on them. They just needed the salt and pepper. And just, that was when, I don't know, like certain meals just stick out in my head. And I was thinking about that the other day, being up at her house and her reaching into that garden and just... seem, because my mom was a big gardener, but I don't think we grew a lot of vegetables as much. And if she did, it was more like, you know, lettuce and salad, you know, tomatoes and things. Like, I don't remember having like potatoes. She probably grew carrots, but I don't remember having a lot of like beets and things like that in the ground. And so that meal really just stood out to me as spectacular. And I think if you grow your own garden, you're going to be amazed at how, and I know even just since I started this podcast this year, like Mike's already said that I've spent way more time in the garden than I usually do, and I'm definitely more inspired, so I hope other people are too. And it seems like, I mean, the podcast is growing like exponentially. I can't believe how good it's doing, like how many people are listening. And
I think
people like hearing different people's stories and sharing the knowledge, and everybody's had way more, you know, some people are like, oh, I don't really know anything. And then they get on and they're surprised at how much they've had to share. So,
yeah, cool. Yeah. Many years of it. That's for sure.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's great.
So how about an inspirational tip to, or something to help motivate listeners to reach into the dirt and start their own garden?
Well, I guess they say that you actually, from the microbes in the dirt, by being exposed to them, you boost your intelligence. So, you know, there's a reason if you really need a reason. But I would just say any tree you plant now will be there for someone else to enjoy. So never think it's going to take too long.
Oh, that's really sweet. I think that's really important too, to think about our kids and our grandkids. And so many times when I've been at school, like at Head Start or just any school district that I've worked in or anywhere I've worked where anybody's like using a styrofoam cup or styrofoam bowl, it just seemed like a Head Start. We had an exorbitant amount of them. But I just always look at people, I'm like, do you realize how long that is going to be here? That's going to be here when your grandkids, 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 babies are born. I mean, it's just, you know, I think the lowest I've ever heard is 500 years is what styrofoam takes to break down.
And
then I've heard it's upward of 2,000 years for styrofoam to break down. And just to think when you see people with coffee cups still using styrofoam, I'm just amazed. I really like that thought about thinking about it's going to be there for somebody else and not just about you. And is the tree going to be there while I'm here? Like, think, well, even if you're not here, somebody else will enjoy it someday. That's really sweet and precious. I like that. Well, Marcy, thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing your knowledge with us and inspiring everybody and just being a wonderful guest.
Oh, thank you so much, Jackie. What a pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Cool.
Marcy and I continue the conversation.
Yeah. Okay. Marcy, so have you grown sweet potatoes?
Yeah. They were really fun to grow. I started them early in the house. You know, I just took a store-bought sweet potato, an organic one, and got it to sprout. And then I put it in a pot and treated it kind of like a houseplant until I could put it outside. And then I put it outside and kept it covered just a little makeshift hoop until it got big enough. And it was a beautiful plant. It was like a kind of a sprawled out vine. Not like a potato where it's in a bush. It was a little more sprawly. But it was really cool because at the end of the season, I think I had to cover it towards the end again too, you know, because we didn't have a really long season. But there were actually sweet potatoes. It was really fun. I like doing that. And then I did peanuts one time in the greenhouse too. And that was a kick. Yeah, it was like, but they don't grow here. You know, you got to be in Georgia or something.
Yeah.
But if you do this stuff in the greenhouse, you can do all kinds of stuff. So, yeah, that's really, I mean, there's a guy down in Trigo that I heard has, in his greenhouse, he has limes, bananas, and what was the other thing he had? Passion fruit, I think. Yeah, he's got them in an indoor, you know, in a greenhouse.
That new greenhouse place they built in Trigo, like right past Dan Flat there? Those two huge, giant buildings?
That might be the one that belonged to Ron Hansen. I'm not sure exactly where the guy is up in there, if he's in that one or not. But even in Trigo, if you've got a greenhouse. So.
All right, I'll have to check into that.
Yeah.
So Marcy sent me an email with a few extra tips that I was just going to read for listeners really quick. So tip number one was know the source of your manure, as weed-free hay contains herbicides that pass through the animal, killing your plants. Tip number two was transplant perennials and trees no later than the end of August, because fall transplanting doesn't allow enough warm soil temperature. So for good root development in our climate, it's best to transplant perennials and trees before the end of August. And then number three was let the weeds stay if they aren't directly blocking your other plants. Many weeds are edible. They help drop minerals from deep down and they provide a balance to the area. So those were three bonus tips that Marcy gave me at the end of the interview, or that she had emailed me, that I just wanted to add to the interview. Thanks for listening.
How would you like to win a copy of one of my all-time favorite gardening books, Rodale's An Ultimate Encyclopedia of Organic Gardening? If you enter our 2015 Gardening Challenge by going to our website at awesomemontana.com and clicking on Mike's Green Garden and the Organic Gardener podcast, right on top, there's a link to the Gardening Challenge where you can fill out a simple form. It just asks your name, the number of people in your household, what vegetable, fruit, or flower you're choosing, how much you plan to grow, and where you live. You can always email me at organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com. That's just organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com. There's no spaces, all lowercase, organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com. And just send me the information there too. Our goal is to help listeners be inspired to grow enough produce to feed your household for a year, or at least, you know, supplement your produce bill a little. So since our first challenge this year, we're just encouraging you to pick one fruit, a vegetable, or a flower, just one, that you would like to grow enough of for your household for 2 to 3 months, like for a season. Since it's a little late, we thought just, you know, 2 months. If you pick lettuce, you might, you know, it always depends. So something that you want to grow 2 or 3 months worth, you know, kind of figure out how much would you buy if you went to the store. Would you buy a 2-pound bag of carrots every week, or would you buy, you know, a 10-pound bag of potatoes every couple of weeks? Or, you know, if you're picking flowers, you might think about, you know, a bouquet. You know, what do you want? Like enough carrots to feed you and your kids, or enough salad to have to eat every day for the month of July, or, you know, enough zinnias to have a fresh bouquet or two on your table each week? You know, whatever it is that you'd like to grow for a season, let us know and you'll be entered to win a copy of Rodale's Ultimate Encyclopedia of Gardening. And then I just want to encourage you, if there's anything we can do to help make your garden journey easier, more successful, if you have any questions, if you just want to share your challenges or successes, we would love to hear from you. If you have any feedback for the show, somebody, a guest you'd like to hear from, or a topic you want to learn more about, you know, please, you know, let me know. Any honest suggestions that we can implement are always appreciated. Just, you know, let us know. Who are you? How do you like the show? You know, what can we do? We'd love to hear from you. Again, you can always email me at organicgardenerpodcast@gmail.com, or just reach out to the contact form on the website. Thank you so much for listening to the Organic Garden Podcast today. Remember to